Want complete protection? Try PhytoGuard, the ultimate nutraceutical combo, a great blend of all the top phytonutrients. I developed it, and it's exclusively available at drhoffman.com. Check it out. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today we're going to talk about food, but from a perspective that I think is different from many of our discussions in the past. You know, a few months ago, I came up with what I thought was an original idea, recognizing that food is just so darn expensive. We often talk about organic this and grass-fed that and range-fed this. But the cost of some of these foods is astronomical. It's actually out of reach for the vast majority of Americans. So rather than making this an exercise for the affluent and the effete, I thought that what I might do, together with my nutritionist at the Hoffman Center, is undertake a food stamp challenge. These days we call it the SNAP program, but I thought I'd look up the amount that's allocated for an individual or a household, and try to adhere to the healthy guidelines while meeting a food stamp budget. Well, I never got around to doing that. That sounds like a very daunting task, but I did come across someone who has done precisely that, and she's our guest today. She is Linda Watson. She is a self-proclaimed food evangelist. She wants to make the world a better place by voting with our forks, and she undertook a food stamp challenge. This is actually something that the government promotes, living on a dollar a meal per person for a week. She did this for 3 weeks. This actually spawned a website, cookforgood.com, and a book that is now very, very popular. It's entitled Wildly Affordable Organic, and she's even topped it off with the Wildly Good Cook videos and a teacher's training program. So Linda Watson lives in Raleigh, North Carolina, with her husband, Bruce, and she walks the walk because she prepares food in an economical fashion in a healthy way. And we wanted to share some of her perspective with you. Linda, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Delighted to be here, Dr. Hoffman.
So, first of all, tell us about how you got inspired. There was this thing called the National Food Stamp Challenge. I didn't know that that was actually something that was out there. How did you get involved?
Well, I saw that there were a lot of anti-hunger activists who about 7 years ago were saying the food stamp allowance has not been raised in nine years. And people don't understand how hard it really is to live on the average allowance, which was a dollar a meal per person. Let's have different people, politicians, church groups, all sorts of interested people, basically cook a week in somebody else's kitchen. See what it's really like to try to get by on that little amount of money. And as I was reading the reports, I was seeing people say, I can't buy vegetables, I can't buy fruit, I can't buy milk for my kids. And I thought, well, that's crazy. You might not be able to buy everything you want, but you can. It's like money. You can't buy alcohol or cigarettes, but you can buy milk and fruit. Well, I want to be part of that conversation. So I talked to my husband and said, let's do it. We'll do a week at a thrifty grocery store. We'll do a week at the Whole Foods, and we'll do a week at the farmer's market and see how well we do that. At the end of the first week, he said, honey, I want to keep going like this. The food is awesome. You're cooking from scratch. And we've never looked back.
I was about to say, you tried it at the regular market and it worked out okay. Then you went to Whole Foods, and after 2 days, you went into starvation mode because it's it's so expensive there. But actually, you know, if you pick and choose properly, you can navigate your way through the aisles of Whole Foods, even though some people refer to it as Whole Paycheck.
You know, they do, and you can spend a lot of money at Whole Foods, and I'd be happy to help you do it. They've got some great luxury items there. But I found that you can buy mostly organic food, even at the Whole Foods, and get by $5 a meal $5 a day per person. And that's what my book, Wildly Affordable Organic, is about. I took that three-week and then three-month experiment, whole year, came up with four seasonal menus, and said, if you don't waste anything, if you cook what you buy, if you cook with the seasons, eat low on the food chain, and cook from scratch, you can afford to eat organic on $5 a day, and you can get by with conventionally grown food for $3.21 a day. Everybody can afford to eat like it matters.
Wait, you said $3.21 a day.
That's conventional, so that's not organic or local,
okay,
or sustainably grown. Mm-hmm. In my book, I shopped at two different grocery stores and two different farmers markets because I wanted to see what would it be like if you were shopping and you weren't saying, I want the organic. On the other hand, I really wanted to see what it was like to shop the way that I ordinarily do, because I think buying organic is not only healthier for you as an individual, but it's a great investment for the planet, and it's
right,
really good for the farm workers too. So there's
indeed
a lot of reasons to shop organic.
Right. So it's a win-win. You're subsidizing a form of agriculture that you would prefer to subsidize, but you also, because of the healthier nutritional value of the food and also the absence of harmful agents like fertilizers and pesticides that are undesirable, you're going to do better.
That's right. That's right. There was actually a study that was cited in a summary of a lot of organic studies last year that showed that children who were born from mothers who had eaten a lot of apples that had pesticides on them literally had a slightly lower IQ, 3 or 4 points.
Wow.
But wouldn't you pay more for apples? Wouldn't you pay one-third more for your apples if your kid would have a higher IQ? I think so. So much cheaper than a tutor.
Right. Well, it sounds like, if we're looking for national subsidy programs that raise the IQ of our populace, this would be a good place to start.
It's a homeland security issue. It really
yep.
is. It not only helps us be healthier and smarter, literally smarter, but to support local sustainable food means that if we have, say like we do right now, a drought in California, then the whole nation isn't wondering if they're going to have something to eat in August.
Right. I mean, clearly this is a way that it's diversification of our agricultural system so that we're no longer so dependent. It's a little bit like being dependent on Middle East oil. We're dependent on agribusiness, and if that system hits a speed bump, we're all in trouble.
You're so right.
So sometimes the food stamp program has been criticized because people make poor choices. I mean, clearly we could have an argument about, there's not enough money, that who can live on this. But one of the reasons that there are cutbacks is because our country doesn't have that much money to throw around, number one. But number two, the food stamp program has been criticized because people sometimes make the wrong choices. They buy non-nutritious junk. Some studies show that folks on food stamps compared to folks who are not on the program are also at low income, that there's a higher prevalence of obesity, diabetes, and that sometimes there's corruption. There's people who take the food stamps, buy steak and lobster and shrimp, and use it as barter maybe to buy a carton of cigarettes.
Well, you've raised a couple of several very interesting issues in that. So first I would say that our government seems to have plenty of money to spend on subsidizing people's beach houses and wars in foreign lands and all sorts of things. There are banks that fail.
That fail.
Fail
right.
Yeah. I would much rather, if we have 100 people on food stamp and two people buy steak and lobster so that they can have cigarettes that they're addicted to that we encourage them to buy in the first place, and the other 98% are healthier, their kids don't go to mm-hmm. hungry at night, they're able to re-enter the workforce, their kids grow up strong and healthy so that they can be productive. I say, go ahead and take the lobster and steak. There's
right.
some corrupt. No system is perfect. So
exactly.
Let's not penalize, poor little Jane because Billy Bob is doing something bad on the side.
So clearly the answer is to provide the resources, but also to provide some guidelines and some help and some education for
yes.
people who may need the information to make better choices. Actually, this is something that harkens back to when I was in medical school. I went to medical school at Albert Einstein College of Medicine, which is located in the Bronx. And one of the projects that I was involved in, everybody knew I was into nutrition even then. And so one of the things that I did was I went into the community. It was mostly a Hispanic community, and I spoke some Spanish. And I, at the time, was teaching macrobiotic cooking. I was actually teaching it as a job to get through medical school. And I said, well, let me take one of these, one of my macrobiotic cooking courses, which I did downtown in Greenwich Village at my apartment, mostly to an upper-class audience who can afford the tuition, which was astronomical then. It was like $50 for the course. Can you imagine that? This was back in 1983. So multiply that by inflation. That was an expensive course. The folks in the Bronx couldn't afford the $50, so we offered the courses for free on how to, you know, use basic ingredients to start from scratch, which I think is what your program is all about, not to buy pre-prepared, microwavable, essentially what used to be called TV dinners, and throw them in the microwave, but actually to take the natural ingredients and to use a little food preparation and ingenuity to save money and to prepare more nutritious food. And that's what we did. And this was 1983, and it was very well received. I mean, people showed up in droves to get that information.
I salute you for that. That's a fantastic thing to be doing. And what I'm doing here, I teach at Whole Foods, as you mentioned. I've taught at high-end cooking stores, big conferences and that sort of thing. But I've also taught in soup kitchens and clinics and you know, at WIC groups and that sort of thing. It's interesting to see that the cooking techniques are the same and the message is the same. So everybody wants to eat delicious food. They want to have it not be too hard to make. They want it to be very healthy. And this is what I find interesting. They want to do good for their community. So many people have told me, oh, when you go talk to those poor people at the food bank, they aren't going to care about farm workers' rights or developing a local economy. That's not true. And this is an empowerment issue for everybody. We have a chance three times a day to make good choices that make this world a better place. No matter who you are, you're eating something. And if you have any sort of a choice, you can direct that choice to let the government, the corporations, everybody around you know, I want good food, I want healthy food for myself, and I want it grown in a way that treats the planet well so the planet can recover.
Just as an aside, do you happen to know whether soda is paid for under food stamps? I believe it is. There was an effort underway. Yeah, there was an effort underway in New York City by Mayor Bloomberg. Because, you know, he's very into reforming the food supply. He wanted to limit the size of sodas, and that caused a big uproar. Of course, he was responsible for the cigarette ban, which everybody was in an uproar about, but ultimately is being adopted all over the world. But one of the things he wanted to do was to create a zone in New York where you could not take your food stamps and buy soda. If you wanted to buy soda, you'd have to use your own resources to pay for the soda. They wouldn't let him do it. Under the federal government guidelines, they said they had to have standardization with the rest of the country where they do allow soda. I have a feeling that the soda manufacturers probably have a little bit of say into what those guidelines are, but I think pretty much everybody can agree that soda is kind of a waste of time. And, if you have limited resources, there should be some, that actually it's beneficial when you don't have enough money to buy soda.
Well, it's an interesting, complex issue. I personally, and this is an unpopular view among a lot of anti-hunger activists, I think that we should not be able to buy soda and candy bars and that sort of thing using food stamps. About more than half of the people who do work on this say, why should we tell families what they can do?
Right, what to do, yeah. No.
And maybe they, I work with people who have bad water in their buildings. Or, mm-hmm. They say, gosh, I've had a long day. I don't make coffee, but you let people buy coffee. Let me have a little bit of caffeine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Who's
yeah, where do you draw the line? I mean, next exactly. It could be, no, you can't buy salt. You can't, buy chocolate, which actually may have some health benefits and so on and so on. But, clearly there are some better ways to utilize our consumer dollars. So where do you start? You actually have some ideas on how to start with a sustainable and economical food program for families on limited incomes, or just families who want to, not expend inordinate amounts on food.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this program works. I've got enough money to buy basically whatever I want, and I've said for years, you can save the money on food. Why throw it down the drain? Why waste money? Mm-hmm. You can save it to pay your rent, or you can go to Paris. And Dr. Hoffman, I got back from Paris 3 weeks ago, so I got to tell you, my program works.
And with probably some great food ideas, because the French know how to utilize those scraps.
Oh, la la, they really do. And I was staying right across from one of the big farmers markets. So what I did there is just what I do here. I know how to cook food from scratch, and that's the big thing that I would like to introduce to the world. That's what we should be learning in home ec and school. That's why I did my Wildly Good Cook videos, to show how easy and fun and delicious it is to do that. And then what you do is you cook some basic foods. I always start with a pot of beans every week. Beans are the most easy, friendly, delicious thing to cook. You just can get a pound of organic beans for about $1.89. There's 10 servings in that pound of beans, so that's, you know, 18, 19.
And that's protein with some carbohydrates and some beneficial fats as well.
And fiber and folate. So if you are either have any idea that you or someone in your family might become pregnant, mm-hmm. and, you know, sometimes it's a surprise.
Yep.
Or if you have someone who has a drinking problem, folate is also really good for helping damaged livers recover. Mm-hmm. It does a lot of other things too, but folate is, prevents birth defects, great for the liver, so folates are wonderful. Beans are supremely easy to cook. You rinse them off, you can soak them, but you don't have to soak them. It adds about 45 minutes if you don't soak them. I cook them usually with onions and garlic to add some flavor. Onions and garlic are really cheap, so they last a long time. And then I use one of the flavorings that is an ethnic flavoring based on my whatever I'm cooking, that helps that bean be more digestible. So if I'm cooking my Cuban black beans, I would use a bay leaf. If I'm cooking an Indian dish, I might use turmeric. If I'm cooking something from maybe some refried beans, I would use epazote. And there's a list in Wildly Affordable Organic that helps you know what herbs to use.
These are herbs of a class of called the carminative herbs. Carminatives are herbs that help to aid digestion and dispel gas and bloating. And every culture seems to have a series of carminative herbs, recognizing probably that just plain old beans, requires sometimes a little bit of digestive support.
Right. It can't hurt. That's what I say. And then you cook them low and slow. So you don't want to boil them. You don't want to boil them really fast. You want them to be tender. A crunchy bean is not your friend.
Right.
And then the other secret is you don't go from, you know, the all white bread ice cream diet to the all bean diet overnight.
Right.
Start every 3 days, then every 2 days, and then my husband and I eat beans once or twice a day, and we still carpool with people. All is well.
Indeed. Okay, that's a little too much information, possibly, for some of our listeners. But one of the things that really is a challenge is that a lot of people who have limited resources have little time. They, you know, may have a lot of childcare responsibilities. They may have demanding jobs, long commutes, and or multiple jobs. So, you know, spending a lot of time in the kitchen, you know, cooking laboriously, stirring the pot, watching. Are there any shortcuts that enable people to prepare these types of meals?
Yes, absolutely. One of my videos and a section of the book is called Cook for Good in 20 Minutes a Day.
Okay.
So in 20 minutes a day, you can cook about 60% of your food from scratch and that includes homemade bread, pizza, homemade pizza crust, whole wheat pizza crust, beans, lots of delicious greens, and dessert. I have dessert every day. And here's the trick. If you have a slow cooker, that's fantastic. If you don't, you just cook big pots of things on your stove, and that's fine. You want to cook in bulk. So cooking every night and washing all the dishes every night and never having any planned overs just takes so much time. I cook 2 pounds of beans at a time for my husband and myself. they freeze beautifully.
And then there's this whole idea of refried beans, which you can sort of reconstitute quickly in a pan.
Right, right, right. And I make my own. So I start with pinto beans, and I cook them with onions and cumin, and I mash them, and I make my own refried beans.
Mm.
But then I freeze some of those. So then, you know, the night before, I go through to my freezer and say, well, I'm going to pull out some beans here. I'm going to pull out maybe some rice that I made in advance. Usually I keep my rice right in the refrigerator. Whole grains last for 4 or 5 days. So make a big pot of that and cook
right.
and use that. Make multiple batches of tomato sauce at once. Once you get going, once you think, I can cook for 2 or 3 or 4 meals at a time, it cuts down on my dishwashing, cuts down on my planning, and then I've got, you know, more time to spend doing whatever else it is I want to do.
And the slow cooker or the crock pot can facilitate that?
Oh, it's a wonderful device. It's so great. That's really how I cook my beans, and it's good for stews. It's a great thing to do. I love to add my root vegetables. Those are really hearty, healthy vegetables. Carrots are the most affordable year-round organic vegetable, and they're loaded with vitamin A, fiber. Kids love them because they get a little sweet when they're cooked, and you can eat them raw, too, so you get natural variety.
What I'm hearing so far is that this is a diet that is largely based on vegetarian foods, because once you get into grass-fed beef or free-range chicken or wild-caught Alaskan salmon, it tends to get a little expensive. Are you averse to using animal protein in this kind of program?
I don't know any way that you can live on a food stamp budget and buy organic, well-raised meat.
Yeah.
So
yep.
I think that's a choice.
I mean, I think that's a truism. I mean, it's unfortunate because for some people, omnivorous diet works well for them. But, you know, clearly, when it comes to economizing, quasi-vegetarian diets really win out.
Well, and in fact, since I wrote this book, Wildly Affordable Organic is vegetarian, and my newest book, 50 Weeks of Green, is vegan. So I've dropped all animal products from my diet about, gosh, it's been more than a year and a half, and I feel fantastic. I've lost another 20 pounds. I feel like I'm 15 years younger. I am so enthused about that, and it turns out to be a lot cheaper. I also dropped some of the health issues of, you know, never have to worry about salmonella in the eggs or milk going bad or anything like that. When I could taste all my cake batter because I don't have raw eggs in it, so there's a lot of advantages that way. But if you're going to eat meat, and I know a lot of people do, it
right.
can be part of a well-run organic farm because those, you know, those outdoor pigs and whatnot and the outdoor chickens can snuffle up the weeds and so forth. I'd say it's much better to go vegetarian and vegan a couple days a week and then eat well-raised meat that was treated as kindly as it could be and that's not loaded with all the toxins and horrible growth hormones. So eat less if you're going to eat meat and eat better.
And perhaps also, utilize what many cultures across the world do, which is to not have big, 22-ounce porterhouse steaks as the centerpiece of the meal, but if you're going to incorporate animal protein, make a stir-fry or use it to flavor a dish, impart some additional protein, but also some flavor characteristics to a predominantly vegetarian meal.
That's absolutely right. Think of it as a garnish or an add-on, not the main course.
You know, right.
Did you see that? There was a new study in cell metabolism that's been getting a lot of attention. It came out...
About protein, yeah.
Yeah, and it said that people who eat a high level of protein, and that's just 20% or more of their calories, are 4 times more likely to get cancer, 5 times more likely to get diabetes, and 73 times more likely to get diabetes if they have no current symptoms.
Wait, you're talking to a scientist and a nutritionist here, and I looked at that study, and I said to myself, that's a very interesting study. However, what happens is kind of weird, because at the age past the age of 65, it starts being the opposite. The more protein you consume, the more likely you are to survive. And so something is a little bit flawed with that reasoning, in my opinion.
Oh, look, I'm, I'm, I, I read, let's talk about that, though, because I've read the whole study, and what I saw was they said if you're over 65, more protein may protect you from cancer but not from diabetes. And what they don't want you to do is to become frail and not get enough
right.
calories. So they said eat at least 10% of your calories from protein.
Yeah, here's the problem that I have with it is, you know, clearly there may be a relationship between excess protein consumption and cancer and heart disease and diabetes in America because our sources of protein are so poor quality. So if we look at aggregate protein intake, animal protein intake, often it's going to come from hot dogs and salami and grass-fed beef, which is poor quality. And what this argues for, and there are a lot of people who I talk to on this podcast, and I personally believe there's something to this, that the paleo diet or the diet that incorporates animal protein the way we used to consume it, which is basically nose to tail and not just the parts of the meat that are very, very rich in flavor, and we tend to discard organ meats, we tend to discard other parts of the animal, that type of diet has been associated with relatively good health historically, and that we've departed from it recently by domesticating our animals and feeding them the wrong stuff, and then processing our meat very, very highly, and then we create health problems. So, I mean, I'm not here to, you know, our prime mission on this podcast is not to debate the merits of vegetarianism or veganism, but to bring out the ways in which we can circumvent the excessive costs of being super healthy, because it's not necessarily just for the effete. I think that that's really your message, Linda, which is that it's health for the masses. The vast majority of Americans can't afford the grass-fed beef at Whole Foods, where filet mignon could cost you $35. And, clearly this is a direction that all of us need to take, is we need to incorporate. There's no question that we need to eat more vegetables and fresh produce. Whole grains are fine for some people. Other people may have food intolerances, or too much starchy food may promote weight gain in them. You're clearly not one of those people because you consume a fair amount of starchy food, and without the animal protein, you're able to lose weight. For some of my patients, that may not be the case.
That's right, yes. I'm actually back below my wedding weight right now, which is great, and I got married 25 years ago. So that's, most people gain about 2 pounds a year. So you can say, gosh, you should weigh 50 pounds more than you do, statistically speaking.
So that's
a good thing.
So the call to action here is you have the cookforgood.com website. Tell us about that website.
Yes, on the website, I've got, you can come subscribe to my free newsletter. I have a recipe every week, lots of free recipes, and a lot of menus, information about my Snap Cut Challenge. So you can see the menus that I did to try to live on food stamps, actually successfully live on food stamps, and a lot of food news, like the study that we were just talking about. So I follow those. Then I have my four videos, which help people go through the main messages of wildly affordable organic. And the real key to that program is, how do you cook from scratch, not as hard as you thought, but it's lost art in this country, cook with the seasons, not waste anything, and then, of course, eat low on the food chain is important to me. But I want to say something about greens.
Sure.
We talked about beans.
Yeah.
Greens are fantastic.
Let's talk about that.
They are very high in other nutrients that help us keep our eyesight throughout our lives. Both my mother and my mother-in-law went blind through some problems that possibly were nutritionally related.
Mm-hmm.
We still eat greens two or three times a week. And I'm talking here
right.
collard, kale, chard.
Probably you're talking about macular degeneration, which is the most
yes.
common cause of blindness in over 65 individuals, and it is particularly common in Caucasian females. For some reason, it's more common in women, but it's also more common in light-skinned individuals for some reason.
You know, it'd be interesting to see if that's a dietary pattern or if it's a genetic thing. I really don't know. But
yeah.
But greens are delicious. I grew up in Michigan, where we ate a lot of cabbage, but we didn't eat collards or kale. Here's the tips if you're cooking for people who don't like to eat them. Some people are super tasters, so they can have
yes,
beans
that everything is very bitter for them.
So the way to get over that is, I love peanut butter. On my website, Cook for Good, I've got a recipe for peanut butter lungs, steamed collards.
Oh, because that would work for me, because you could put peanut butter in virtually anything. I could have, escargot or, alligator with peanut sauce. It would make anything appealing to me.
I had a mom say that she could get her kids to eat cardboard. Well, I don't recommend cardboard, although I understand that's really cheap, too. But, yeah,
right.
I love peanut butter.
It's got fiber in it.
Great sauce. I have a peanut butter noodle dish in Wildly Affordable Organic that is a great seasonal dish. It's like Thai noodles. You just add some garlic, ginger, and soy sauce. Very easy sauce to make. And then you put in whatever seasonal vegetables you have. And that's a great way to have a restaurant-quality meal that you can make in 20 minutes, that's good the next day, and it's super thrifty and healthy.
So, Linda, this sounds like something that the government should take up, because, I mean, you're certainly just handing people food stamps or SNAP cards is only part of the solution. We need wonderful educators and evangelists like you to go out into the community and, get people excited about healthy food choices. Have you had any attention from your state or local or from the national government?
I spoke at the national FMAP, or excuse me, the multi-state, it's WIC, and then it's government nutrition training, the family and nutrition training program conference this last year, and got a very good review from that. And I'm also going to a big breast cancer conference in about 2 weeks.
Great.
We have the Mother Earth News Fair in Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, I love Asheville.
On Saturday. Oh, Asheville's fantastic. And then up in
Aren't Saturday, they about to have the Fiddler's Convention around this time of year?
You know, they might. That would be really great. I could cook
a little bluegrass music.
It's a great place. It really is. I've talked to a lot of legislators, and I talk with our local extension agents. They're very interested in bringing nutrition training, but I would love to. That's why I did these videos, is so that people could show those videos. They could be wildly good cook teachers. So listeners, you can use these videos, do live cooking demonstrations. I show you how to do those. You can run your own cooking classes and help people in your neighborhood address their particular needs, whether that's getting by on a shoestring, supporting your local farmers, or just cooking food that tastes fantastic.
Great. And so we hope, I understand that one of our faithful listeners is Michelle Obama. She doesn't miss a single episode of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. So perhaps, when she's having quiet time with Barack, they can discuss this, and maybe you'll be getting a call from the White House.
Oh, Mrs. Obama, I'm 5 hours away. I will just let me know, and I'm right up there.
Okay. You'll get into your, economical electric car and environmentally friendly, and head right on up to the White House. And
I'll take the train. I'll take the train.
Well, I understand that their pastry chef just left, so maybe there's a spot for you up there.
Oh, I make some really great desserts. People say, why do you have dessert every day? And I say, because this is the way I want to live, and my husband loves dessert. So I have figured out ways to incorporate vegetables and fruit, and of course the ever-healthy chocolate, which is full of phytonutrients.
Yes.
And whole grains into really wonderful desserts.
So
that's
great.
You don't want to eat a lot of dessert, but a little bit of dessert every day tells you and your spirit and your body everything's okay.
Well, the next time they have a state dinner there, one of those formal black tie affairs, I suggest that they have you prepare one of your economical menus on whatever it is, $83 a week or something along those guidelines, to show people how they don't have to put on the dog. They don't have to have a big extravaganza. The food can be delicious, and we can demonstrate by example from our national leadership that Americans don't have to eat high on the hog and can actually safeguard resources and economize using wise food choices. So great job, and I think you're really inspirational. The book is Wildly Affordable Organic. The website I recommend very highly, cookforgood.com. And now there are the videos, wildly good cook videos. And when's the Broadway show coming to Manhattan?
Oh, gosh, I guess right after I go up to the White House, so it has to come out then.
Absolutely. And we'll all be dressed up as organic carrots and rutabagas, and there'll be like a big Broadway dance number.
A Beanapalooza. It'll be great.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for joining us, Linda Watson. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.